The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
All right, it is. It's a Thursday, and what a day it is. Not a great day. In fact, the day got off to a pretty lousy start. Aside from the usual news, you know, more bodies being pulled from the rubble here in Miami, and the rescue and recovery effort, search and rescue, whatever they're calling it, had to be stopped because they're afraid that second building is going to collapse. Lovely. And then the Supreme Court finished off their term in, exactly the way we thought they would. So I'm getting on the line. Hopefully, I think she's there. Lisa Graves, are you there?
I am. Hello.
Awesome. Lisa Graves is with us because I couldn't think of anyone I'd rather speak to on the occasion of the Supreme Court basically sticking a dagger into the heart of America. So Lisa, as we talked about the other day when we met, you know what? I need to give you a proper introduction so people know who you are, because I always think that they just do. So Lisa Graves is the executive director and the founder and editor-in-chief of True North Research. They're at truenorthresearch.org. Through her projects with both this organization and the Center for Media and Democracy, where she was before, she helmed a number of projects exposing the Koch brothers in kochdocs.org, exposed ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, in alecexposed.org, and a whole bunch of campaigns like that, where she just shone us a bright spotlight on these groups that are doing harm to what is left of our country. Before all of that, Lisa has served in the highest levels of government. She was the Deputy Assistant Attorney General in the Clinton administration, Chief Counsel for Nominations for the Senate Judiciary Committee under Senator Patrick Leahy. Her credentials go on and on. So that's I'm going to direct you towards her bio, because if I were to go through the whole thing, it would take us the full half hour that we're slated to talk, and we don't want to do that. So with that, Lisa Graves, welcome back to the show. And I should mention, you just launched your new Substack newsletter yesterday.
We did for truenorthresearch.org. And so we'll have that every week, and maybe some other, maybe more often with breaking news. But thanks so much for that lovely introduction, Nicole.
Oh, awesome. And I hope I'm one of the first. I saw the notification of the newsletter and I signed up immediately, and I can't wait to start reading it. I'll put all the sign up contact information on the blog today at NicoleSandler.com/7-1-21, along with the podcast, so people can find you. So with all that out of the way, Lisa Graves, oh my God. So here I was dutifully sitting in front of the computer at 10 o'clock, hitting refresh, refresh, refresh. There were two cases left for the Supreme Court to hand down their rulings on. And I guess today is the day we'd been dreading. They were both horrible. I know you were mostly concerned, well, obviously concerned about both, but special concern about the case having to do with dark money, Americans for Prosperity. Tell us about this case. What was at stake here, and what happened?
Well, you're right, Nicole. I was closely watching both cases, and the voting rights case is the one that I think is going to get a lot of coverage.
Right.
But it's the Americans for Prosperity case that I think also warrants, public concern, great public concern, actually, because this is a case where now you have the hyper-partisan Supreme Court. It's a 6-3 ruling after that court was passed with the help of Senator Mitch McConnell. And that hyper-partisan court ruled in ways that were expected today, even though those rulings weren't consistent, in my view, with longstanding precedents of the U.S. Supreme Court and practices that we've had. So in this case, what was at stake at the kind of the fact level was that California has long required nonprofits, meaning entities that do not have to pay taxes. They've got the privilege, unlike the rest of us, of not paying any taxes on their revenue. And one of the things that that results in many states, in California in particular, is that those groups have to file an annual tax return where they pay no taxes. But in that return, they have to disclose to the state secretly, not to the public, who their largest donors are. And that information is often used in roadmap as a roadmap for investigations of charities in the state of California as when they're examined for potentially violating their nonprofit status. And in fact, we know that some charities have received huge anonymous donations from one group to another and, you know, sort of passed money through, acted like a bank for someone else's money in order to influence elections, influence propositions, initiatives, as well as elections. And so what happened was the Koch brothers, really now it's obviously Charles Koch, one of his primary political groups called Americans for Prosperity Foundation, challenged that longstanding requirement and claimed it was unconstitutional.
Oh my God.
Now, those sorts of disclosures have been on the books for decades. Millions and millions of these forms have been filed with states and the federal government. There's no evidence that any charity has ever been, like, basically pursued wrongfully as a result of these filings. It was literally a challenge by Charles Koch's groups to basically say that if they are required to secretly disclose this information, that their big donors might be chilled. And they claim that their big donors would be afraid to associate. They've invoked this this freedom of association claim to say that this disclosure law should fall. And the Supreme Court agreed with them, a partisanly divided court agreed with them. And the implications are whether this court will now take on basically dismantling disclosure laws more generally by claiming if your information, the fact that you have donated, is disclosed, that you would be chilled from donating, which is just a huge potential cover for massive dark money donors. And this comes at the moment Congress has been considering and debating how to respond to the dark money that has distorted our political, our elections. By having something like the For the People Act, which require disclosure. So the narrow part of the ruling was about California, but the broader implications, as the dissent said, put those disclosure rules into the bullseye for this court to try to dismantle and pretend that the First Amendment requires that disclosure laws fail constitutionally.
So this is like above and beyond, because groups like True North Research, the work you've been doing for so long, Lisa, has been fighting back against the idea of dark money, of these big, rich, obscenely wealthy entities putting in all this money and us not knowing who's contributing. And so this, if I'm hearing you correctly, was the Koch brothers, now just Koch brother, challenging this California law that said, well, you have to disclose the big donors, although they're not disclosed publicly, it's in a private filing. And that's the thing that he challenged, which is so a small portion of it, but is this going to have ramifications over all donations, all dark money that's out there?
Well, that's a great question, Nicole. And the reason why it's so significant is because what's happened, and as your listeners know, is that the U.S. Supreme Court has expanded our First Amendment, the First Amendment rights of ordinary people to speak, which have actually been really restricted and challenged in Florida and other states, the ability of ordinary people to protest or dissent.
Hello.
What's happened is the U.S. Supreme Court has expanded the idea of speech to mean that money is speech.
Right.
And that decision, which was grounded in an old case called Buckley versus Vallejo from 1976, and then was dramatically expanded upon in a way in the case called Citizens United in 2010, which unleashed this torrent of dark money. The implication of the idea that money is speech, meaning it's entitled to constitutional protection, the implication of that is that anything that is a right, a fundamental right, then is subject to scrutiny if it's restricted or if people are chilled. That's the frame of the court. If people are chilled in exercising that right. So what they're basically saying is, if you might refrain from spending money to influence elections for fear that it would be disclosed, that would make that disclosure rule potentially unconstitutional.
Oh my God.
And so, it's like this chess game where, while the rest of us have been trying to respond to, you know, for 10 years now to get a Disclose Act or something like it to get this dark money into the public arena, what Koch has been doing in this chess game is basically one or two steps ahead, which is to try to get the court to basically preempt those disclosure laws by saying that disclosure would chill the giving, this secret money being given to these groups to run these secretively funded campaigns to distort the outcome of our elections. And well, so that's the risk that we face, is that this court would overturn current and future laws on disclosure.
Right, because my initial reaction to their complaint, as just a, you know, a run-of-the-mill ordinary citizen, is too fucking bad. Of course you need to, you know, we need to know who's donating to whom. You know, a good case in point, Lisa, is just what happened last week, where after the January 6th insurrection, almost every big major corporation said, we are no longer going to donate to those companies and entities that were behind the insurrection or that didn't object, you know, to that wanted to not certify the votes, that wanted to upend democracy, basically. And now a report comes out earlier this week that says, well, a lot of these corporations have now begun giving money again, and most notably Toyota, who's, you know, way out in front by multiples of money, more than anyone else. And people are rightfully saying, well, screw that. I'm never buying another Toyota. This is what they're getting at, where they don't want to let it be known who Toyota is donating to. Would this spill over into that realm?
It certainly could. And so, I myself am planning to never buy a Toyota because,
me too.
Quite frankly, this idea that these corporations or billionaires or whomever are going to be supporting people or groups that tried to fundamentally disrupt. The counting of the votes in our election, mm-hmm. including politicians who tried to stop the counting of votes in our election. I think people have a right to know where money is coming in and where money is going. You know, money is corrupting. Money is distorting. And what's happened since Citizens United is that a huge amount of money is not actually being spent directly on politicians. It's being given to these outside groups like the Koch Network groups, who then spend huge money to influence those elections. And the only people who are kept in the dark is us.
Yeah.
Because when the politicians go to the Koch events in Palm Springs or wherever and kiss the ring, basically, metaphorically, of Charles Koch, they're there with a bunch of other Koch billionaires. They know who exactly who the big players are that are helping them win office, whether it's the presidency or other offices. The senator from Iowa basically talked about how her political career was made at that Koch event. So we
Joni
don't know
Ernst,
which
right?
billionaires yeah. are at that. Right. Yeah. Right. We don't know which billionaires are at that Koch event, but she does.
Right.
And she's thanking them for making her career possible. Those people did not give those huge sums directly to her campaign, but they, you know, apparently gave huge sums to Charles Koch to help her through different front groups win that campaign. And so what's happened is we have this illusion of transparency where an ordinary person, actually most people, could not possibly max out on their donations
right.
to political candidates or to the political party. It's like accumulates in cycle to something like, you know, $120,000 a year, which is way more than anyone who isn't very rich could give. So even in the disclosed amount of money, most people cannot possibly max out. But for these billionaires, that's a pittance. They want to give huge sums to get their people in office. And they do it through this dark money operation. And what's been happening is there's been this fight in Congress led by people like Senator Whitehouse and AOC and others who are pushing for disclosure laws to get this money out of the dark and into the public light so you can see who's running ads to influence our election results. And what Koch has done through this case is bring a case up to the court to try to preempt that and try to prevent and suggest that it would be unconstitutional to disclose who those people are because it might infringe their willingness to spend that money.
It's
genuinely outrageous, you know?
It really is. And so, Lisa Graves, can you explain why? I mean, all day long, I'm getting alerts through my email and on Twitter and on TV seeing about the voting rights travesty that happened today, which we'll get to in a second, the other opinion. But this one, they're not mentioning at all. Is it because dark money is a complicated situation that people don't understand?
I think it's because this is sort of a harbinger case. This is a canary in a coal mine case. So the issue here was whether the information could be disclosed or required to be disclosed to a government agency. And so, you know, it's not like there's this big constituency out there that's like, hey, make sure that, you know, protect the rights of government agencies. You know, that's not a thing that is, you know, among all the things people are fighting about, it's not the top of the things that are, you know, sort of on fire. But the fact is that it's a case that is designed to basically take down the next level of disclosure laws. And so the voting rights case has that sort of an immediate effect in terms of the issues that were being challenged in that case and also the future. This case certainly affects the ability of California and other states to require this information, but it's the state that doesn't get the information, not the people. However, what we know has happened through the push of the Koch network and with the help of the Trump administration is that the IRS stopped requiring this information, basically at the urging of Charles Koch's groups during the Trump administration. Wow. And not only that, but they and the information that's the information that was provided to the IRS. There was a public portion of that information which didn't disclose the names, just disclosed the amounts. So it would say this nonprofit had, like, let's say it had $2 million in revenue, and $1.5 million of it came from three sources, $500,000 each. Then you go, oh, so this nonprofit really represents like three people.
Right.
It claims to represent millions of people, but in reality, it's backed by three big donors. We don't know who they are, and this is not a hypothetical case. This is actually what happened in the Supreme Court nomination process, where one big group that was called the Wellspring Committee that has close ties to Leonard Leo, who is a leader of the board of the Federal Society and was formerly its vice president, that group, the Wellspring Committee, had like one huge donor of like over $20 million.
Oh my God.
The name is not disclosed. And then it turned around and gave almost $20 million to the Judicial Crisis Network, JCN, which then turned around and spent millions of dollars to help get Brett Kavanaugh confirmed.
Wow.
So we know through the Schedule B, which is this type of disclosure, we don't know the name. The government would know the name, but we don't know the name. The public doesn't know the name. But we know the fact that one huge donor really bankrolled a huge portion of the campaign to get that one justice confirmed. And so it is a big issue, even though it may not appear to be that way, because what was blocked was this disclosure, the confidential disclosure to the agency. But already what's happened is that Koch and Trump changed the landscape to prevent groups like mine from even seeing the bare fact in the 2020 filings of the amount, not the identity. They were trying to protect the amount, not the people's names.
Oh, wow. Okay, hold that thought. And let's for just a moment talk about the other case, which was Brnovich versus DNC. And it was like I think Arizona Republicans versus the DNC. It was two cases brought into one. And basically this, we are already in the last big challenge to the Voting Rights Act. The court gutted Section 5, which is the pre-approval section where a state who'd been guilty of violations in the past, say Georgia, before they could make any changes to their voting system, would have to run it by, I'm guessing, the Justice Department and get pre-approval because they've been shown to violate voting rights before. I'm oversimplifying it, but I think that's the gist of it. This time, they gutted Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act, which says you can't discriminate on the basis of race when it comes to voting. I know I'm oversimplifying it. So, Lisa, why don't you tell us the better explanation of what happened?
No, I appreciate that description, Nicole. I would just add to it, which is to say that there were, like you said, this was about another part of the Voting Rights Act that the court had never taken up, meaning it had never restricted its application. But in an opinion by Justice Alito, who was named to the court by George W. Bush in his second term, Justice Alito, the guy who's famous for sneering at President Obama about
during the State of the Union, that justice, right?
He wrote the opinion, and in the opinion, he basically tried to, narrowly construed that protection, despite evidence that there is a discriminatory impact of these provisions. And let me just describe why. So one of the main there were two primary provisions, but one of the main one was this question of when ballots are collected. Collected by other people to help someone who can't get to the polls vote. And there was evidence that the Democratic Party showed that, this change in the rules would disparately impact Native American reservations where people live, in more remote areas in terms of the ability to vote. It could affect a number of people, had a disparate impact racially. And then also the other part of the provision that the law took aim at was, let's say you wanted to vote and this had been your precinct. You basically always gone to that precinct. And then the political party basically got the precincts moved around. And you went and voted that day at what you thought was your precinct.
Right.
But it was the wrong precinct. And so the Republicans wanted that vote thrown out, not transferred to the right precincts, because you're still an American, you're still voting.
Still the right to vote, exactly. And the court went along with them. Yeah. The court said, if you vote in the wrong precinct, your vote gets tossed. Unbelievable. There are three tweets that I saw today that ring true for me. So let me share. Ellie Mastal of The Nation wrote, I'm unclear how a person is supposed to argue that voter suppression laws are racist now. According to Alito, that doesn't seem to exist anymore. So there's that.
Yeah.
Ari Berman, who writes about voting laws for Mother Jones, I think he summed it up beautifully. He said, SCOTUS conservative majority is quite literally making it easier to buy an election and harder to vote in one.
Excellent description.
Isn't it? I mean, it's just spot on. It's sad, but very true. And Mark Joseph Stern, who writes about the court for Slate, wrote, by this time next year, there's a very good chance that the Supreme Court will have established a constitutional right to concealed carry and overturned Roe v. Wade. What do you think about that one?
Yeah, I mean, certainly true. I mean, those tweets, I think, are all very accurate. And in this case, what the Republicans claimed, which was pretty outrageous, is that they needed to pass these measures, these restrictions on bringing the ballots in and on where you voted, because the state has an interest in preventing voting fraud. So the Supreme Court accepted this idea that there's implicitly that there's voter fraud, which has been proven statistically to be super rare.
Right.
But neither of these provisions actually limit voter fraud or respond to any of the super rare instances of voter fraud where someone votes for their dead spouse, which we've seen Republicans do in this
Republicans
past cycle,
are doing it. Right. And there have been a handful of them, but that's a handful more than Democrats who've been busted for doing something similar. There haven't been. The ones who are guilty of this voter fraud are Republicans. They're the ones screaming about it.
Right. And it's not systematic. It's not system-wide. No, it's not outcome-altering. Nothing like that. But they, pass these provisions to restrict the right of people to vote and to get those ballots counted that have nothing to do really with fraud at all, and are just more about trying to limit the ability of people who they don't want to vote or get those votes counted. And, I think this question of you voted in the wrong precinct, precincts do change and
all
you're
the time.
Voting through the whole ticket, the presidential ticket, the Senate. Like, your precinct only actually matters in reality for like maybe your local school board, which is a big deal, right?
Right.
But it's not as though every single person you voted for on that ballot is in your precinct, right? Your precinct is just an artificial device that often has been used to make it harder for people to vote. We've seen precincts close over and over and over again. You can look at those lines in Georgia, in Texas, where it's like, oh, you can suddenly now you can only vote at one place, or you can no longer vote at the place you used to vote. Good luck figuring out where you're supposed to vote now. And people are already busy, stressed out, you know, with the pandemic last year and more. And, you know, we should actually be making every step we can to help make sure people can vote and that their votes are counted. But that's not the Republican way.
No.
Republicans have now embarked on this campaign this year to restrict votes in numerous ways in Florida, Texas, you know, other places. They've been moving these really regressive measures forward. And this Supreme Court, through Justice Alito, basically said, come on in. You know, we're not going to strike these things down. We're going to impose a really high burden of ever being able to overturn these measures. And so it really is a hyperpartisan decision by a hyperpartisan judge who's demonstrated his hyperpartisanship. And he has a couple of other, you know, a majority of hyperpartisan judges willing to go with him to limit the reach of the Voting Rights Act. And I would be remiss if I didn't say, Nicole, that even though Justice Roberts didn't write that decision, he signed on to that
decision. Yes, he did.
And there's been fantastic reporting over the last couple of years that showed that Roberts has had a hostility to the Voting Rights Act since he was in the Reagan administration in the 1980s.
Wow.
So this is part of a much broader Republican attack on the Voting Rights Act itself, which is, you know, one of the only protections we have. And now we don't really, which is why, in my view, we need the For the People Act and the John Lewis Act. And we need people to be calling their members saying, we've got to fix this. We need common sense measures to protect the right to vote and to get this dark money dragged into sunlight.
Absolutely. You know, one last thing, just Mother Jones just tweeted out another missive sort of from Ari Berman, who wrote, but now it seems likely that the court will exempt all manner of new voter suppression laws from being struck down under the Voting Rights Act, turning its back on protecting the voting rights of communities of color, just like it did during the Jim Crow era. This is where we are right now. And that was going to be my next question for you, Lisa, is what can we do? And what we can do is demand demand that they pass the John Lewis Voting Rights Act and the For the People Act. And the only way they're going to get that done is by getting rid of the filibuster. Do you see any other way around it?
No, you're exactly right. The filibuster has got to go. And people should be calling and demanding it. And this August, in any, you know, congressional visit, people should be demanding that their members stand up for democracy, for majority rule, not minority tyranny. And, you know, also, we actually really need to clean up the Supreme Court expand it so that it has a fairer representation of the American people, so that it's not packed with these right wingers who are willing to put their thumb on the scale of justice to favor the political party that appointed them, and that who will not be like a new Jim Crow court, but who will actually vindicate and protect the Constitution by making sure that its core provisions in our democracy, which include the right to vote, are fully protected, not dismantled by a pretty extremist right-wing minority party that is determined to try to extend their power, like basically minority rule over the majority vote of the people in this country, which is what we're, you know, it's shocking to even have to say those words out loud,
yes, as
I know you've covered it repeatedly, but we are sitting in a country right now where a majority of Americans voted for this president, a majority of Americans voted for President Biden, and we have a minority party that is willing to basically do everything it can to make it harder for Americans to vote so that it can rig the system to win elections and continue to have minority rule in America. And now we have a Supreme Court that is basically vindicating that or validating that through one of the most partisan justices that sit on that court. And so I think that decision is illegitimate. This court needs to be reformed. The U.S. Senate needs to be reformed. And we need to take back our democracy, and also not just take it back, but actually have it fulfill the promises that it has failed to keep in the past.
Without a doubt. Lisa Graves, that's why I love having you on this program. thank you so much. I direct everyone to truenorthresearch.org. Sign up for their new newsletter. It just launched last night. It's a weekly thing, but you'll get important, useful information like this. Lisa, you're the best. Thank you so much for helping us figure out what happened to us today. And it did happen to us. And now we need to stand up and not let it happen again. Thank you so much, Lisa.
Thank you. Thanks, Nicole. Thanks for having me on.
My pleasure. Thank you for joining us. We'll talk again soon, I hope. Thank you again. All right. Bye bye, Lisa.
Thanks.
Lisa Graves, she is the best. She's so smart and she's so good. And what she's talking about is so important. All right. Oh, well, it is that time. I was going to take a little break, but I see the clock and it's telling me that somebody's got to mix up those Dirty Debbies. Whose turn is it today? Is it you? Is it you?
Are you a multinational corporation hungry for a treat? Well, come on down to Schmucky Chucky's, where you'll personally be seated by Chuck Schumer himself.
So many dishes, and they're all fresh.
You're going to love our Blue Dog special, the Dino Burger, because we say so.
A good hamburger and French fries.
And every burger comes with a side order of
grits. I love grits. I love anything with corn. It's corn.
All for only $50,000. Wash it all down with a Dirty Debbie.
9/10 water, 1/10 orange juice. After a week or two, you drink this, it's 200 calories and it's acetic.
And wipe your mouth with a tissue print of Glass-Steagall. For dessert, try our DNC tarts.
Little cookies, tell the quality of that.
Most restaurants give you a mint, but at Schmucky Chucky's, you get complimentary.
Sweet and low.
Who picks up the tab for all this? Find out now with Howie Klein of DownWithTierney.com on the Nicole Sandler Show.
Oh, hello, Howie Klein.
Nicole, hello. How are you doing today?
Oh, you know, I'm struggling. Feeling like, you know, we need to listen to REM today. It's the end of the world as we know it. Because, you know, I'm watching the news, getting past what the Supreme Court did today. Watching, you know, I'm in South Florida, so it's nonstop coverage of the building collapse. And then I see a news item that a building collapsed in Washington, D.C. today. But it was a building under construction and only one worker was trapped underneath the rubble. But what is going on?
Were they able to save the worker?
I don't know. This happened not long before I came on the air, so I don't know. I think it said one worker was trapped and four others were there, but a building under construction came down. I know this is not directly infrastructure, but it is. Our entire nation is crumbling around us. And you know, all the Republicans seem to care about is money, except if it's their money, they don't want you to know where they're spending it, thus the ruling in the Americans for Prosperity thing today. It's just astounding. And so I was just talking to Lisa Graves. Do you know Lisa?
No.
Okay, she's been in the Justice Department. She's a legal person, and she was an assistant, deputy assistant attorney general under Bill Clinton. She worked in the Justice Department under Patrick Leahy, and now she runs this True North Research. Her group, her last group, was the ones who did the Koch exposed investigation and Alec exposed. She really is the one who brought them into the mainstream. So we knew who the Koch brothers were and we knew what Alec was doing with all that model legislation and stuff. So she kind of explained to us what went on today at the Supreme Court. And what she said is her solution is we need to reform the court. We need to reform the Senate. We need to do away with the filibuster. And we're going to move on in a moment. But I found this piece of video the other day that I know you, Howie, go way back with Kyrsten Sinema. This is video of Kyrsten Sinema back in 2010 talking about the filibuster and how, you know, people like Joe Lieberman kept the Democrats from doing all the good, important work they were supposed to do. I want to play this for you. It's a minute long, but it is mind-blowing. So here's Kyrsten Sinema.
So what does that mean? Well, in the Senate, we no longer have 60 votes. Some would argue that we never had 60 because one of those was Joseph Lieberman. But that's whatever.
Hypocrisy.
Yeah, and Nelson, too.
But and Nelson, too.
So now there's, I think as the president so eloquently said on Wednesday, there's none of this pressure, this false pressure to get to 60. So what that means is that the Democrats can stop kowtowing to Joe Lieberman and instead seek other avenues to move forward with health reform. And so it's likely that the Senate will move forward with a process called reconciliation, which takes only 51 votes. And by the way, it's not unusual. You may recall that before the Democrats took the Senate in 2008, that the Republicans controlled the Senate for quite some time, in fact, since around 1994. They never had 60 votes, and they managed to do a lot of really bad things during that time. So the reconciliation process is still quite available, and we will use it for good rather than for evil. So
that's Kyrsten Sinema talking about using reconciliation for good rather than evil, Howie, and blaming the Democrats' inability to get anything done when they had allegedly had 60 votes on Joe Lieberman and Ben Nelson.
Right. So what's important, the most important thing that our listeners need to understand is that Kyrsten Sinema at that time, before that time,
yeah,
to that time, and at this time, doesn't have any political perspective on anything. She's not ideological. She doesn't care. Did you hear that applause?
Yeah.
That's what she likes.
That's what she
She's
likes.
She's after attention. That's it. This is a very, very sick woman. As you said, I've known her for years. She doesn't care. She wasn't a progressive then. She was saying progressive things. She's playing the role of a progressive, but that's all she is. You know, I hate her, and I talk about her all the time as a conservative, but she's not a conservative.
No.
She's not anything. She's just a mental case. This is literally a person with very, very severe mental illness. She has one thing that she's looking for. It's attention. When all that attention was going over to Biden,
uh-huh.
I'm sorry, from Biden over to Manchin,
right.
and the media was talking about how Manchin is the decision maker and it's all about Manchin, she went nuts. She went out of her mind because she is more dangerous than Manchin because she wouldn't think for 2 seconds if she should just blow up every agreement made. And she has as much of a chance to do that as Manchin ever did.
Wow.
Very, very, very careful with her. I've noticed that someone has gotten to Biden since then and has told him, you know, you've got to be careful with this woman. And he's now taking her much more seriously and trying to assuage her, whatever it is, her insanity.
Wow.
But, you know, I wanted to talk about something else before I forget, before we move on to another topic. I don't know if you've had a chance to watch this or not. There's a 40-some-odd minute compilation from the New York Times that came out today. Did you see that?
No,
yet?
About January 6th. I just heard about it, but I haven't seen it yet.
It's beyond belief. I mean, I thought to myself, well, I've seen all this stuff. Do I even have to watch this? And I thought, well, I know what happened on January 6th. I know what happened after. And, you know, I've watched everything.
Right.
That's what I thought. I was in shock when I watched this.
Wow.
Every single person who hears our voices has to watch this video.
Okay.
It's up on YouTube now. If you don't have a subscription to the New York Times, you can find it on YouTube.
Okay.
Just, you know, type Day of Rage, New York Times, something like that, and it comes right up. And I have it going up on my blog in the morning.
Oh, good.
But I'm not kidding you. This is unbelievable. I mean, it shows, for example, the killing of this Ashley Babbitt.
Right.
I mean, the moment that she's killed, you see it. And I jumped out of my chair and started screaming and cheering and applauding when that happened and cursing the police for not mowing down these people.
All of them.
Just, you know, dozens of them is what they should have done.
That's
all
right.
Along, and they didn't do it. And I'm sure they were told not to do it. And I'm sure they had reasons for not doing it. But and I'm sure also that the Proud Boys, who you see, like, you know, orchestrating this entire thing, wanted that kind of violence.
Sure.
That's what they were looking for.
Of
they
course.
Were trying to provoke that kind of violence. But my gut told me that it should have happened. I mean, they should have killed every one of those Oath Keepers and Proud Boys and Boogaloo Boys and all of them. But, you know, that's me. I don't
right.
believe
and
in,
now
I
today,
believe
today
in, I believe in the penalty, I should say.
But now, today, because, you know, the Trump organization is in the crosshairs, and Weissenberger, whatever his name is, was arrested and arraigned today. Donald Trump is trying to once again deflect the attention, and he's going on off about the cop who executed Ashley Babbitt must be named. Bullshit. That cop was doing his job protecting those members of Congress as she was trying to break through the broken glass window to get at them.
She broke through.
I know. She was going through it. I've seen that part of it.
He shot her in the breech.
Yeah.
And he wasn't a cop, by the way. It was a security guard.
Okay.
But, you know, he was, I mean, it's the same as a cop. But
Capitol
he wasn't
Police,
like,
right?
Member of a police force.
I thought it was Capitol Police. But either way, it doesn't matter. He was doing his job. She was breaking the law. She was entering hallowed ground. I mean, going
Not
through the broken
ground. She was entering an area where there were where these members of Congress
were working
were stuck
right.
and couldn't get out.
That's right.
And these people wanted to do to them what they did to the police. I
That's
mean,
right.
This video is unbelievable what you see these domestic terrorists doing. When I see this stuff about how they're going to get like, 36 days in jail or 36 weeks
oh,
in
please.
Jail.
No.
I go out of my mind.
Right.
No. No, put them away forever. We don't want they're not needed in society. They're needed out of society forever, ever. They should never see a moment of fresh air and fresh sky again, any of them.
I agree. 100%. And I haven't even seen that video. I mean, I've seen a lot of it,
video,
but
you won't believe what this video is like. This is the New York Times worked on this for 6 months.
Wow.
6 months of putting this together and analyzing it. It was like I couldn't believe it as I watched it. And I watched it twice, and I'm going to watch it again.
Oh, my. Okay, I will watch it tonight. I definitely will watch it tonight. And 100% believe that her killing was justified. And again, as you said, if I was one of those cops, I would have sprayed that whole hallway. All those people were trying to get into the speaker's lobby to get into the House of Representatives where our elected members of Congress were being held because they were under attack. What else do you do?
Exactly. I mean, and you saw the moment when it was like a split second where Mitt Romney either was going to live or die.
Yep. I know.
I mean, I had read that before, and I had seen stills of it before, but I didn't get it until I saw the video footage today. In other words, just a few seconds later, Mitt Romney would have been dead.
Yeah.
Instead, a cop saved him.
And you know who the cop was?
He was saved.
Right. And it was that same cop. I forget his name. It's with a B. He was then promoted and honored by, you know, Nancy Pelosi because he's the one who also led those group of marauders, you know, killers, in the opposite direction from the Senate. These people protected us, protected our government, kept us from it could have been immeasurably worse. If not,
and here the Republicans are still to this day, today, trying to cover this up,
yep.
trying to make believe it never happened, trying to prevent the American people from finding out what happened. And it's succeeding because 30% of Republicans think this was just a bunch of Antifa people running
right.
around and impersonating Trump supporters.
Oh, a majority of Republicans now believe that it was the Democrats. It was Joe Biden. It was, quote, Antifa, which doesn't fucking exist, who did this. It's opposite
That's right.
world. These people are out of their minds. So, yes.
I mean, you're right. They're out of their minds and they'll never be convinced. But there are some people who watch Fox News, for example,
yep.
who may be convinced by seeing this. I mean, it would be hard for me to imagine that Pelosi's select committee is going to be any better than what the New York Times did. It'll be different. They're trying to get to, you know, the causes of it.
Right.
The New York Times thing just showed it, and they did talk about some of the causes, but I'm assuming that the select committee will go deeper into that. The thing that I didn't like about the select committee selection today, I mean, some of it I liked.
Yep.
I mean, certainly that she appointed
Jamie Raskin.
That was a good thing.
Yep, that was a
certainly
good thing.
Certainly that she appointed Liz Cheney. That was a good thing.
Uh-huh.
But if you want to get people to watch this on TV and to pay attention to it, if you want the media to pay attention, you don't put some boring old man crony of hers.
I know. Benny Thompson, the wrong guy to lead this.
I hope he lives to be 300.
Right.
But no.
He's not the chair.
No, not at all. Not at all. He is not the right one. And half of those people on there are just her doing political favors for cronies. They're awful. I mean, Pete Aguilar? Aguilar?
Right.
I mean,
Stephanie Murphy?
Coke freak. That's what he is. Ooh. He is a Coke freak. I put a picture of him on Coke up on on my Twitter feed today if you want to see him being a Coke freak. Hard to show someone being a Coke freak. This photo shows someone being a Coke freak. That's who Pete Aguilar, what should you put him on for? Because he's the number two New Dem or something. Or one of those awful Republican-type groups. Stephanie Murphy.
She's a nobody in Florida.
Nothing. Just co-chair of the Blue Dogs.
Uh-huh.
That's how Pelosi makes these elections.
Wow.
Instead of picking a great team of you know, what about Joe Neguse? Why not? Why didn't he get on
That's
there?
That's what
why
I was screaming.
Why didn't Mondaire Jones get on there? These are people who know how to win an audience over, how to make a case, how to make the media interested. I mean, you watch Benny Thompson for 5 minutes and you're fast asleep.
I know. I don't get it. I honestly don't get it. But thank goodness Jamie Raskin is there. And I know you're not a big fan.
Adam Schiff.
He'll be okay.
You know, I'm not like the biggest Schiff fan in the world, but at least he's going to keep people awake. So
thank
God he's on there as well.
That's right. So the two of them, I'm putting all my eggs in their basket. I don't even know who Elaine Loria is. And Liz Cheney. Who is Elaine Loria? I've never even heard of her.
A wretched New Dem. Terrible. Terrible, awful. She doesn't belong anywhere near there. And the other day, there was a very important bill that came up. One Democrat voted against it. It was her. She was the only one who voted against it.
Oh,
every other Democrat was for it. She was against it. That's who Elaine Loria is.
Oh, God. Lovely. Well, in addition to this, and at least this is happening, and then we hear that Kevin McCarthy is going to take his, I guess he gets 5 picks, and he's going to pick the worst of the worst. And there are rumblings that he's going to put Marjorie Taylor Greene on this committee. Seriously?
Well, I think Pelosi has a veto power.
I hope so. I certainly hope so.
Yeah, I believe she does. That, you know, he can suggest it to her, and she's supposed to put all his picks on. But I think if he goes over that line, and that she'll say no. Now, if he picks Lauren Boebert,
there's no difference there. Lauren Boebert, Gosar, you know, Gates, that whole crew.
I think Pelosi will have no choice. She'll have to let them on. But Taylor Greene is the one that she'll keep off. And that's not because she's worse than them. It's just because the House voted for her not to be on
any committee. On any committee. Yeah. So the next thing that we need to do, I mean, Lisa Graves' advice was...
One more thing before I forget it.
Yeah?
It's one of the things that you'll see in this New York Times video is that you see very clearly that some of these members of Congress, like Gosar, who you just mentioned, are going to be investigated. They're part of this. So there are specific members of Congress who have to, you know, who have to be looked at very closely. They cannot possibly be on this committee. Paul Gosar cannot be on the committee. Paul Gosar
was complicit.
Someone who the committee should recommend to the police
as a target,
authorities, right? Taken away and arrested and thrown in prison.
Yeah, and his family says the same thing. By the way, they say he's guilty of this, and they've been saying that. So
but this time they went further. This time they said he's a traitor.
Uh huh. Wow. And yes, I've no doubt that he is. And the handful of others. I saw something on Twitter yesterday that somebody tweeted this group of names, including Gosar and Marjorie Taylor Greene and Lauren Boebert, who allegedly gave tours to some of these insurrectionists the day before on January 5th. And my response was...
Boebert for sure, because she was seen doing that.
Wow.
So she can't be on this thing because, in other words, another member of Congress, Abigail Spanberger, saw Boebert doing it. So that will be one of the things that they look into.
Good.
So how could she possibly be on the committee?
Well, she can't. Good. I know that was like he gets his picks after consultation with the speaker, but I didn't know that she had veto power. I hope she does. I mean, she gets to make the rules.
I read that she does, but I don't know that for sure. But if she wants to, if she doesn't have it, she can get it easily.
Right.
You just
exactly.
have the Democrats vote it. Vote it as a rule.
Exactly. So that's the going on in the House. So when Lisa Graves was on with me before I got you on the line, you know, I asked her, what can we do? And basically her thing is you need to get on the phone after the Supreme Court rulings. You need to call your senators. We need to pass the John Lewis Voting Rights Act. We need to pass the For the People Act. And my response was, yeah, well, unless they get rid of the filibuster and get rid of some of these so-called Democrats in the Senate and replace them with real Democrats, that's not going to happen. So along the lines of replacing these people with real Democrats, that's got to be our push. We need to increase the number of not only Democrats, but progressives in the Senate. And on that note, we have good news today by way of a new announcement of a campaign.
Right. Charles Booker, who ran against who tried to run against
yeah.
Mitch McConnell. Now, what's interesting here, and anyway, he announced today he's running again for the U.S. Senate 2 years later.
Against Rand Paul.
For the seat that's held by Rand Paul.
Right.
What's interesting, and I think not widely reported at this time, is that Schumer doesn't appear to be doing to Booker what he did last time.
Oh, good.
Last time Schumer sabotaged Booker savagely. In the primary alone, Schumer's candidate spent 40 times what Booker spent and just beat him very, very narrowly. I mean,
yes.
Booker almost beat her anyway.
And if the election had been a week later, chances are he would have won. But the candidate was that woman, the female fighter pilot. I can't even remember her name anymore.
Amy McGrath.
She was a horrible candidate.
She lost her congressional race, which she spent gigantically on. She lost that congressional race 2 years earlier in the second most Democratic district of Kentucky.
Wow.
If she can't win the second most Democratic district, how does she think she's going to win the whole state?
Really?
Especially just being a Republican-like candidate. Now, Booker inspired people. He's not a Republican-like candidate.
No,
he's all-the-way progressive.
Right.
People were extremely inspired by him. And then when Schumer basically bought the nomination for her, people just lost any inspiration,
yep.
And she got slaughtered. She couldn't even get to 40%.
That's right.
McConnell just slaughtered her. McConnell, the most unpopular senator in the United States for over a decade.
Yeah.
And she couldn't make the case.
Right.
She didn't even try to make the case.
No.
Just tried to be a little bit less Republican than him.
Amazing.
But now Charles Booker. Sorry about that. Charles Booker is running again. A lot of support is coming his way, and I have very, very high expectations that this guy is going to make a really, really cogent and powerful case against Rand Paul. I'm extremely excited about it. Blue America, of course, is going to endorse him. We're just going through the last minute stuff, but yes,
he's great.
One of our-
Can I take 2.5 minutes and play his kickoff video? Because it's really good.
Please do.
Okay, let's do this. This is the campaign kickoff for Charles Booker for Senate, running against Rand Paul from Kentucky.
Freedom. It's been the story of America, or so they say. Because we know the truth.
Right.
For so many people across Kentucky and across the country, freedom hasn't been freedom for us. I come from a long line of Kentuckians. I've had ancestors who were enslaved in this Commonwealth, lynched in this Commonwealth, fought for desegregation in this Commonwealth, because we knew freedom wasn't something that was gonna just be given to us. We had to struggle for it. What we have are these politicians who have been free to exploit us.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Freedom to rob us.
Yes.
Freedom to tell us that we don't deserve better.
Yeah.
And all we can ever afford to have are politicians who don't care whether we live or die.
Right.
That's not freedom.
No.
Well,
the people of Kentucky are my family.
Yeah.
One thing I was taught early on is that you fight for family.
Yeah. Right.
We can make freedom ring true.
Absolutely. Yeah.
We can make it ring for everyone.
Yes, sir.
We can build a future where Breonna's door isn't kicked in.
Yeah.
We can make freedom mean that every community across Kentucky is thriving.
Yeah.
With a good paying union job.
Yeah.
That we're not just working the struggle less, but that we're owning.
Yeah.
We're creating.
Yeah.
We're building pathways to wealth all over Kentucky.
Absolutely.
We're going to take this message from the hood
to the heart.
And so as we go into this day where we celebrate our independence, let's commit to making it mean something.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I'm not just asking that of you. I'm going to lead by example.
Okay. All right.
And it's with that understanding that we have to lead ourselves that I'm going to run for United States Senate.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
We're going to make it ring
yeah.
because Kentucky deserves it.
Right.
I believe we're ready for this moment.
Yes.
If you're ready to prove the doubters wrong, let me hear you say yeah.
Yes.
I believe we're ready to heal and grow and thrive and make sure the opportunity rings true for everybody in this Commonwealth.
Yes.
Are you with me?
Yes.
Are you with me?
Yes.
Are you with me?
Yes.
Yes. Charles Booker for U.S. Senate. Charles Booker. .org. That was a powerful video, Howie. I've got goosebumps.
Yep. You remember that great video by that Randy Bryce put out?
Oh, yeah.
When he first ran?
Yeah.
That was made by the same guy who made that video.
Very good. Really good. By the way, speaking of these Senate races, Reverend Warnock, Raphael Warnock, in Georgia won his race, you know, this last year, but it was a special election and he's up again. And Herschel Walker, the football player, is challenging him. And this is worrisome because the American people have their heads up their asses. And a recent survey says that the American people would choose Tom Hanks or Oprah Winfrey or any run-of-the-mill celebrity over a career politician to be president. So the fact that Herschel Walker, who knows nothing about being in the Senate or governing, is going to run against Raphael Warnock, I find really disturbing.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's, you know, there's a segment of the population that obviously we got wound up with Donald Trump.
Yep.
Who goes after, meaningless, empty celebrity.
Amazing. So all we need to work extra hard for Raphael Warnock as well. This has to be this election. I know we say every 2 years, this is the most important election ever. This one really is because
they all are.
I know they all are.
It's getting more and more urgent by the minute.
Yep. It's crazy. It's just there's no just looking at what is going on and what's at stake. Again, it feels like if the Republicans are able to steal, and of course they accuse the Democrats of doing it because all they do is project. So they accuse the Democrats of doing exactly what they do. They've been stealing everything, every election possible. And if they do it this time, if they are somehow able to take back the Senate, and or the House, I mean, I hate to think of what's going to happen, as if things aren't bad enough already.
Yeah, and there's every possibility that's going to happen. I mean, you know, a lot of this stuff is predetermined by the boundaries that they draw, the gerrymandering.
Yep.
And Republicans control enough seats in enough legislatures to do that. And that alone, just changing the boundaries of enough congressional districts,
right,
can win them back the House.
Exactly.
It's not going to win them back the Senate, because you can't change those districts.
Right.
They're all statewide. But
the House, they can probably get. Yeah. So there's so much at risk here that now is not the time for people to check out. Now is the time that we need to be even more involved. And it's hard because, as encouraging as I tried to be towards Biden at the beginning, with each passing day, he seems to be wimping out a little more.
Yeah, terrible.
Horrible.
I went out with an old friend yesterday who's, you know, she's not really that political, and she brought a friend along, who I'd never met, who's very political, and the friend asked me what I thought about Biden, and I told her, and my friend didn't want to hear it. I mean, she was offended. She was horribly offended by it, that I would say those things about President Biden, and then I explained to her that I've been following Biden since 1972, and that, you know, Biden ran on one thing at the time, and that was on racism.
Right.
And he ran to protect so-called white voters from busing.
Yep.
And she didn't know what to say. At first, I don't think first of all, she's an African American.
Wow.
And I don't even think she understood what I was talking about.
Didn't she see Kamala Harris in the debate?
But she didn't understand. She was saying, well, busing was a terrible thing. I'm saying, I don't think you're listening to me, honey.
No.
And then at the end, she realized. And then she still said, don't say anything bad about our president.
Right. Well, that's the problem. If people aren't willing to be critically honest, then we're never going to be able to make it better. Sorry,
exactly.
You got to criticize too. You know, it's because you care. It's because I care that I criticize. I didn't go around screaming about Obama for 8 years because I didn't care. I was critical because I saw him screwing up. And we criticize because we love.
Okay. And that, and you know, I mean, the first thing that someone like her thinks is that what is he talking about? He's so much better than Trump.
Well, duh.
Yeah. The caterpillar that I almost stepped on today and stopped myself at the last second is better than Trump.
Of course. Right. That's not one. You can have one without the other. One has no bearing on the other. My dog Jackson would have been a better president than Donald Trump. It doesn't negate the fact that Joe Biden is not doing what he needed to do. And I'll leave
it
there.
You put it mildly.
Yeah. All right. Howie Klein, as always, thank you. We'll talk next
Thank
week.
You,
and
I'll
actually,
talk to you next week.
You know what? Next week, we're going to be joined by Lucas Kuntz. Is
oh,
that
wonderful.
His name?
Is he going to be, are you going to have him before me or on with
me? He's going to be on with us. He's going to be on with us next week.
Wonderful.
Okay.
Oh, that's great. I'm so happy to hear that. And in fact, before me, don't you have
Matt
Stoller on?
I have Matt Stoller on the day before. So he'll be on Wednesday the 7th and then Lucas.
Guess who introduced me to Lucas?
I'm sorry?
Guess who introduced me to Lucas?
Matt Stoller, because I know that there's a connection there. Good, so I can ask him about that.
We should all be on, all of us should be on at the same time, and then no one will hear anything.
But, right.
but like I said, it's a good segue to go from Matt into me and Lucas.
Cool. All right, so we have that to look forward to next week. It's good, because
yes.
I need things to look forward to, because I'm ready to rip my hair out right now.
Don't do that. But do watch that New York Times video. It's just
I certainly will. I will tonight. I'll smoke a big fat joint first because otherwise it'll be too upsetting. Howie Klein, as always, thank you. We'll talk to you next week.
Next week. Bye.
Okay. Bye-bye. There you go, Howie Klein. All right. And we're done. I tend to be going into overtime a little bit more these days just because we can. You know, that's the beautiful thing about this. The Progressive Voices ends at the top of the hour, but we can keep going. So anyway, let's see. It's Thursday. Tomorrow, I'm not quite sure about tomorrow yet. I am taping an interesting interview in the morning that I don't want to tell you about yet. And depending how I feel tomorrow, either I will play that back tomorrow afternoon, and I promise it's going to be a good one. It'll be fascinating. Or I will hold that for next week and do my annual 4th of July music show. See, this weekend is the 4th of July, so I won't be on the air. Monday is a holiday, but I'll be here Monday. So I don't know. I may do an hour-long, you know, musical salute, as it were, to America tomorrow. Either way, we'll have a show, one way or the other. I'll see you tomorrow. And now I will leave you with the news because God knows there was a lot of news today. And a lot of it happened after I recorded What's News, but here's as it was a little bit after 10 this morning. All right. I'll see you tomorrow, everyone. Thanks for listening.
I read the news today. Oh, boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Well, the 2020-21 term of the Supreme Court ended with a bang. They saved the two biggest cases for last, and the very rightward slant of the court is now undeniable. In cases dealing with the Voting Rights Act and dark money disclosures, the opinions were both 6-3 along ideological lines. Ari Berman, who covers voting rights for Mother Jones, tweeting, quote, SCOTUS conservative majority is quite literally making it easier to buy an election and harder to vote in one. In other news, The Trump Organization and its chief financial officer, Alan Weisselberg, have been indicted by a Manhattan grand jury on charges related to alleged tax crimes, most notably employee perks such as rent-free homes, car leases, and bonuses. Weisselberg turned himself in Thursday morning. He's set to appear in his first court hearing Thursday afternoon, at which time we'll see the actual charges. The House voted Wednesday to establish a select committee to investigate the January 6th attack on the Capitol by a mob of Trump supporters. In the 222 to 190 vote, only two Republicans, Liz Cheney and Adam Kinzinger, voted in favor of it. Pelosi had previously said she was considering appointing a Republican to one of her slots. But during a closed-door meeting with freshman House Republicans on Wednesday, Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy warned that if any Republican accepts an appointment from Speaker Nancy Pelosi to the January 6th committee, they better be ready to get all their committee assignments from her. Wow. By the way, 19 members, all Republicans, did not vote. Many of them followed Trump on his photo op at the border. True to their characters, members like and including Lauren Boebert, Madison Cawthorn, and a few others cited the pandemic as their reason for voting using the proxy system many in their party have criticized. So, Bill Cosby is a free man. Pennsylvania's Supreme Court on Wednesday overturned his sexual assault conviction, saying that Cosby's due process rights were violated when he was charged and convicted. Huh? Well, the court reversed lower court rulings by finding that Cosby's right against self-incrimination was violated. The decision hinged on a prosecutor's promise years ago not to prosecute Cosby, who then spoke freely about the matter in a lawsuit, only to have that testimony then used against him by another prosecutor. The state's high court called that a, quote, affront to fundamental fairness. But critics of this decision point out that there's no written record of any such deal. And if it's not in writing, it didn't happen. Furthermore, they say that no prosecutor has the authority to grant immunity. Cosby was convicted on three felony counts of aggravated indecent assault in 2018 for drugging and sexually assaulting a woman in 2004 and was 3 years into a 3 to 10 year sentence. Some of the dozens of women who have accused Cosby of sexual abuse called the decision to free him a grave injustice. Well, the number of people confirmed dead in the collapse of the Champlain Tower South in Surfside, Florida, rose to 18 on Wednesday after search crews found six more bodies, including two children. About 145 people remain missing. Crews searching for survivors managed to build ramps designed to allow heavier equipment to get in, potentially speeding up the task of sifting through the rubble from the tower, which fell last week. Investigators have yet to determine what caused the collapse, though engineers had warned of the urgent need for structural repairs for years. And we're now learning that five of the building's seven condominium board members quit 2 years ago, as repair estimates skyrocketed, stalling work that engineers said was needed to halt accelerating deterioration. Well, this is a turnaround. The University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill's Board of Trustees voted Wednesday to grant tenure to Nicole Hannah-Jones, this after weeks of backlash after an initial decision to withhold tenure from the Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist. She's best known for conceiving the 1619 Project for the New York Times, which re-examined the legacy of slavery. Conservative critics claimed she distorted history by arguing one of the founding fathers' main goals in seeking independence was protecting slavery. Protesters at the meeting expressed support for Hannah-Jones, whose case was seen by many angry faculty members as a test case on equality for black women in academia. Turning to New York City, all of the test ballots have reportedly been removed from the system and a new tally is out in the race for the Democratic nomination for New York City mayor. Eric Adams, the Brooklyn Borough president, still holds a narrow lead over Catherine Garcia, now in second place. It's 51.1% to 48.9%. making the margin just 2.2 percentage points. There are roughly 125,000 absentee ballots still to be counted. But Maya Wiley, who was in second place on primary night, was eliminated after the eighth round of vote counting, having finished oh so slightly behind Garcia. At the same time, none of the absentee ballots have yet been counted. So these numbers are based solely on in-person voting, which strikes me as not very fair. The New York City Election Board has come under intense criticism as it tries to navigate its first year using a ranked choice voting system, which allows voters to rank their top choices 1 through 5 in order of preference. But it seems that this election has been riddled with nothing but problems. And finally, C-SPAN has released its survey of presidential leadership, something they do every 4 years, or have since 2000. And the former guy, Donald Trump, made his debut, ranking 41st ahead of just 3 ex-presidents, Franklin Pierce, Andrew Johnson, who, like Trump, was impeached, and James Buchanan, who consistently places last. The survey measures each president based on 10 leadership qualities. Trump placed dead last for administrative skills and moral authority. Former President Barack Obama moved into the top 10 for the first time, up from number 12, with a boost from his third place ranking for pursuing liberty and justice for all, behind just Abraham Lincoln and Lyndon Johnson. Lincoln was ranked first in the overall survey, as he has ever since the survey began in 2000. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is 100% listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button.